flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
G&D, welcoming you back on The Fan. We are brought to you by the law firm Kondori & Murad.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for a future as well. It's the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Kondori & Murad, can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with our estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
So we've got the huge 106.7 The Fan event tomorrow. We're going to be at Tally Ho Theater. It's called 106.7 The Fan Live. It's basically an on-stage presentation of the entire show lineup, talking DC sports, radio insider
stuff. Insider bits.
But no restrictions, right? People can say and do what they want to do. There's no FCC regulations. It's a lot of fun. We do one of these probably a year. They normally go very, very well. Listeners come out. We do a lot of pictures and hang out. It's just a really, really good time. And it's a great opportunity for us to mingle with you guys who help make the show possible all year long, which is a big deal. I bring this up to tell you, unfortunately, we've been sold out for months.
You haven't heard us talk about it a lot?
Yeah.
Because we feel bad because everyone who's going to go is pretty much there now because they got tickets right away.
The idea was that we were going to do this event and sell tickets for several weeks. And then when we announced the event in a pretty big theater, by the way,
Tally Ho,
tickets sold out very fast. So we just haven't talked about it on air nearly as much as we would have. That having been said, we have tickets to give away today. In fact, every show is giving away a pair of tickets. So the Junks and B. Mitch and Finley have already done this. And to my knowledge, we have the last pair of tickets that is going to be given out for this event at Tally Ho Theater. We're going to give them away at 6 o'clock today. I think we should play a game to give those tickets away at 6 o'clock. Danny Ruya, you can choose the game.
Oh, okay.
Think on that a little bit.
I'll Christian ponder it.
But just know at 6 o'clock, we're going to give away the final pair of tickets to the 106.7 The Fan live show. So make sure you're listening at that time. It's already been a big day for me because I've learned a new term today. I've learned the term big back.
Big back.
Big back. Now, this is not to be confused with he's big back.
Yeah, like he's returned in a major way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not
like
that.
Sam Darnold was a former top five pick who stunk. But this year, he lit it up. He's big back. He's back to his USC days. He's returned. I like that phrase, by the way. I've used it a few times when I say something like, the Chiefs, man, you thought they were done. They lost last week. They are big back. They won by 40 this past week, right? Apparently, though, because we work with people from Generation Z, or maybe Alpha or Zoomer. I don't know what we're doing.
The Zoomer Alphas, yeah.
20-year-old people. Mm-hmm. We're working with young folks now. Because of that, we've learned a new term, and we will from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Big back, which means fat.
Yeah.
So I'd like to bring Ben on, who is our aficionado at this term.
Young person correspondent.
What I can't quite figure out is, like, do you say, Grant, you're big back because I'm a heavy person who's fat? Or is the term used, because you were describing it like your buddy eats three chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A and you're like, bro, that was big back.
That's big back behavior?
So what are we doing with this phrase exactly?
So it's kind of special in a way because you can use it as a noun, as a verb, as an adjective. It fits any of those categories because in the noun, let's say you have a friend that loves to eat a lot of food all the time. Nothing wrong with that. You say, yeah, he's a big back.
I'm a big back.
If you want to classify yourself as that.
Well, I mean, you're looking at me. I'm a big back.
I'm not gonna say.
There you go, Ben. There you go. Well done, Ben.
It's very early.
Because Corporate Claire is sitting right there waiting to write your butt up.
I couldn't wait to send him to HR.
It's too early in my career to get blackballed here.
Look at Ben.
Very good. But in his infancy at the station, he passed the test.
The verb. You know, let's say all this food that just came around.
Right, we have a food drop today we're going to be telling you about. From a Thai restaurant in D.C.
Corporate Clary over here he just snacked on some Cheez-Its for some reason. He's like, oh, I'm getting a little bit full. And I was like, well, you need to get big backed. Like, you need to get ready for this Thai food that we just got. And he's like, huh? What do you mean? And now he's
so
ready
big backed
to be
like,
big backed.
You got to get fatter, man. You got to be fat. We're about to eat.
So Joey Chestnut, before a competition, must rev up his big back rating.
He's the king of big back.
Okay. But he's not that fat. That doesn't matter.
But that doesn't matter.
Okay. That's a big back behavior.
All right. So when I had him,
that is a perfect description. Right
when
there.
I had a metabolism
behavior,
Benjamin, I went to Chipotle, got a Chipotle burrito and chips and guac. As soon as I got home, 10 minutes later, my buddies walked in and like, hey, we're going to go to Chipotle. Do you want to go? And I said, yes. And I had a second Chipotle burrito. I wasn't fat yet. I had a metabolism, but that was big back behavior.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
But you wouldn't say that's big back behavior. What would you say?
No, I'd say that's big back behavior. An example for me.
But you would just shorten and say that's big back.
Couldn't you just say Dane is being big back?
You could say it like that, but right. My girlfriend Marissa, who's definitely not listening because she would never listen to sports talk radio.
Of course,
it's good to know.
Why would she support your endeavors? Her and Darius's dad have that in common.
Is she listening to the Kevin Sheehan podcast?
No.
Or is it or not? None
That's
of it?
Just Darius'
okay.
dad, yeah.
Because if so, they should
she
meet.
She hears enough about me ranting about the Commanders or whatever it is. But anyway, every time we get Chipotle together, when I eat Chipotle, I just eat it so fast. I love it. It's so good. And she's always like, damn, big back. And,
so she uses that phrase.
Oh,
yeah.
So what I want to know is,
she'll make fun
Darius
of it.
Darius knew about this term. It's one thing. How old are you, Ben? You're like 22?
I'm 17. 21.
21.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
He was born in 2003.
God,
that's... Isn't that annoying?
Wow, that's insane.
What's your earliest Commanders memory?
Ooh.
Like, who's the quarterback you remember from when you were a little kid?
First.
My first quarterback? I remember watching the preseason when John Beck was potentially going to be the quarterback of the future.
I was on the beat. And it's so funny.
My earliest memory is being 4 years old and hearing my dad screaming from the basement every weekend. And one day I was like, Mom, why is he like this? What's happening down there? And
what's happening down there?
We don't
there?
Think about Sundays with your father.
Yeah.
And then the next year I was in kindergarten and I was brought to the team. I was shown the way how to be a Redskins/Commanders fan. I went to my first game in 2010, which was against Tampa Bay. It was a monsoon.
You got to see Rex Grossman.
Ryan Terrain. Well, that was Donovan McNabb playing.
Oh, that's true.
McNabb threw the game-tying touchdown to Santana Moss on a fifth down. I think that was the fifth down game.
Okay.
Then the snap on the field goal attempt was botched, and I cried the whole way out of the stadium. And it's funny enough because Gano missed a 24-yard field goal in that game, and I do remember that very well because everyone in our section was like, did he seriously just miss that?
He did.
And yes, that was my first memory. And then I tortured myself for many, many years. And
not that many years, if I'm being honest.
Not as many as some.
You're only 21. So, but Darius, you're older. You're my age. And every now and then, you know some of these terms, which I don't understand.
Well, he's online.
Yeah, I'm just twitching. I'm online. I'm on
thing,
the yeah, exactly. I see it on Twitter. I'll see. I follow like a lot of food pages.
I don't follow anybody on Twitter.
No, why would you? Everybody's just
and
so
I
miserable.
Mute even
and
more people than that.
Yeah, there's just so many mean people. Why would you follow anybody?
Yeah,
but I follow like a lot of food pages, and sometimes they'll reference like a Big Back activity, and it's them like cooking some
ooh,
fabulous.
Oh,
meal.
I see.
Right.
I don't think this one's gonna make my repertoire. Like I don't think I'm ever gonna be dropping Big Back. As fat. Because I don't even use that, like, I know that there are people that go, what a fat thing you did. I don't really do that.
Yeah, I do that one. Like,
you do?
Like, fatty behavior. To me, like, I think, I even had a bit about this that I used to do. But to me, like, I don't know if people are heavy or not heavy, but people have fat souls. Like, your behavior, is even as a skinny guy with a metabolism, can be aggressively fat. You can act fat. You know what I mean? Like,
so maybe Big Back will work for you.
Yeah.
As a phrase that you could work in.
It just feels like I shouldn't be saying it. I don't know why. If it comes from the young people, I shouldn't be. I need to always sit on the sideline.
When your kids start using it, it's just going to work its way into your lexicon.
Well, my kids do use it. The way to get them to stop using something, by the way, is to use it yourself.
Oh,
if you don't like one of their terms, put that term in your rotation, and it goes away quick.
They immediately just say,
oh, they hate it.
We can't be doing
this. It's like, Dad's on MySpace. Let's close down MySpace.
G&D on the fan. All right, so when did you know Jaden Daniels was going to be a star? And that Washington was eventually going to have to give him a Big Back contract, right? One of those big old fat juicy deals, just a giant Big Back of a deal. At what point this season did you go from either being hopeful or even if you were confident, if you loved the pick, if you were all in on Daniels from his LSU days, when did you go, they might have something special here? We want to zero in on that with you on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines at 800-636-1067.
So if you recall, this is not, I'm wrong all the time. I was right about this one. This is the guy that I wanted from the whole draft process. So I always believed, but still, you're waiting for confirmation. You're waiting for some of those moments. Week one against Tampa, wasn't it? Week two against the Giants, wasn't it, if you remember? It was some good, but it wasn't like what would end up coming to pass. That Cincinnati game that you and me were at was awesome. But there was that was awesome against what a defense that we now maybe think is the worst defense in the sport. They're terrible. I don't know if this is authentic or not. It's the following week. So you go from Cincinnati on Monday Night Football when the world saw this incredible performance, and it was incredible. Okay, that was one. That's one out of three games now where he's been transcendent and amazing and awesome. On the road against Arizona, he made NFL quarterbacking in that game look like the simplest little activity. Look like this little casual thing. I'm gonna step by Arizona and put him in the woodshed. It was this effortless, in control, no incompletion, nothing they did surprised him or scared him or slowed him down. And then he followed up with more against Cleveland. There are a couple of plays I could point to. But to me, it was a like, do we realize what's happening? I'm doing the Michael Scott thing when the fire alarm goes off in the office. I'm running around waving my arms going, yeah, Cincinnati, that was amazing. That was awesome. I was there. It was cool. We're now following it up with excellence. We now have the thing. That's how it felt.
So respectfully to that Cardinals game, because he was really good. He was 26 of 30 in that game. That game was mostly, from what I remember, really schemed up well.
Totally was.
Like, they just never had a doubt when he dropped back because there wasn't pressure, and he was throwing to wide open receivers. And there were 25 quarterbacks in the league that would have had a really good day that day against the Cardinals when they ran all over Arizona and scored 38 points. I'm going to the week before against the Bengals.
You're allowed.
When Danny Ruye sitting next to me at that really loud, raucous stadium right before kickoff with a 1-1 Washington team that had only beaten the Giants because the Giants were god-awful. In a game that they almost lost, by the way.
Yeah, Malik Nabers makes the catch, they lose.
They were down at halftime. They could have easily lost that game at the end. The Giants just out-batted them, basically. And by the way, Daniels did not play that well against the Bucs. He ran for 88 yards, which was cool. But as a passer, he showed almost nothing in week one. And then in week two, in the first half against the Giants, he was even worse. He took 5 sacks in the first half of that game and held the ball forever. The second half is when he finally connected the dots. Had a couple inbreakers to Noah Brown that were thrown perfectly. They moved down the field. They scored some points. They got a win. He had a game-winning drive, I believe, in that game. Week three, you're at Cincy. You're 1-1. He's played 2 good quarters as a passer out of 8 at that point. But it's the last 2 quarters, and you're going, now you're on the road. Worst environment you're playing in early this season. Let's see what the kids got. They're down 7-0 when he first took the field because the Bengals went down the field on like five plays and Ja'Marr Chase just blew past Mikey Sanristil for a touchdown. And it's 7-0 and it felt like it was going to be 50-0 in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
But then Jaden Daniels took the field and Washington walked down the field with ease all night long. They score 38. They win. And in that game, Danny, he went 21 of 23 with some really low percentage throws, with one of the great throws of the entire season by anybody statistically. When you look at percentage of chance that it's converted as a catch out of his hand, that dime to Terry McLaurin in the corner to beat the Bengals basically with a dude barreling down on him that drills him right in the face mask as he throws the football. When he made that throw to put the game away, among some other just absurd throws in that game, and on primetime, under the lights where Washington always gets embarrassed, in a tough environment, he goes back and forth with Joe Burrow all night, and he goes 21 of 23 with a couple of touchdowns. And oh, by the way, mixed in 12 scrambles for 40 huge yards in that game. I thought, whoa, boy, we might have something here. This kid might actually be really, really good. And then to your point, he was great against the Cardinals. They win. They come back against the Browns. He had more downs in that game than he previously had, but his ups were so up. Like that scramble play off schedule where he got away from two guys and threw the 60-yarder to McLaurin that almost
okay,
went.
That's stupid.
And the season was on at that point. But the moment that I, for the first thought, the time thought, maybe he's going to be a star, maybe he's special, was the Bengals game.
That environment, and we now know more about the Cincinnati defense and how bad they were.
Fair.
Doesn't necessarily matter, though. Just because, again, you said it. You can have a bad defense that they still get punts. They still stop you sometimes. You know what I mean? Sometimes passes are incomplete. And it wasn't just checkdowns. It wasn't just, you know, that Mark Brunell 20 straight completions game against Houston where it was screen passes and sideways things and, you know, throwing to guys underneath. It was everything. The throws still have to get made. You know what I mean? Like that game was so incredible that you go, okay, maybe they're turning the corner here. So I don't hate that answer at all. In fact, I mentioned it in mine. The simple fact was, that began a stretch where it was no longer, I hope, maybe it began a stretch where it is, right? Because you mentioned those plays against Cleveland. There are a handful where you just go, there's three guys that do that. One's Lamar Jackson, who's going to run for 1,000 yards and be an MVP candidate. One's Josh Allen, who should be, you know, is an MVP candidate. Maybe the other's Mahomes, might head fake a guy in the backfield and sling it sidearm on fourth down for 30-some yards. And now Jaden Daniels is in that group. I'm not putting him on that level with those guys yet. There's a lot more that has to be deposited. I'm talking about a couple individual plays and moments in that Cleveland game and then sort of going forward from there. And then against Baltimore, the best team they played to that point, he was not the reason they lost. You know what I mean? Like, like you level up in difficulty, and he held his own from the pocket. They were determined to keep him there, and he actually played pretty decent. Again, not just for a neophyte, not for a kid, but for him. I mean, for an NFL quarterback. And then, the race was on at that point. Then it was his Rookie of the Year award, and everyone was competing for second place.
I'll give you another one. I think for the most part, he had played like well with some star performances, but all doubt was gone about him having that extra gear or just being that special guy after the Hail Mary play against the Chicago Bears, which, by the way, feels like it was really late into the season. But it wasn't really.
Halfway mark, basically.
I mean,
right?
That was like the eighth game of his year.
Yeah, it was week eight.
It wasn't a particularly awesome performance. I mean, they won 18-15. That was the week after the Carolina game. He was okay, but remember, he hadn't practiced all week, was dealing with the rib injury, which maybe got worse because he played worse after that. But in that game, he had the most yards he would go on to have all season long, mainly because, you know, 60 of it or whatever came on the last play of the game, and he went over 300 yards passing. Which I don't think he did another time. He had 299 against the Lions, which was his second highest passing total of the season. That came in the playoffs. But the thing about the Hail Mary was not just that they converted it. That play is skill as much as it is luck, by the way. It's not a coincidence that Aaron Rodgers pulls it off with some regularity in his career, and a lot of guys never will convert one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is an element of throwing a moon ball, the timing, placement of the ball, and where it comes down in the end zone. But the key is the buying of the time. And for him to have moved around for 13 seconds, never once being close to tackled, Most guys can't do that.
Yeah.
Pick a starting quarterback out of a hat and say, move around and don't get touched for 13 seconds. Now, the Bears helped you because they called a terrible play. They brought no pressure. They only had three guys rushing, and Washington was able to keep some guys in and corral that. But that play was just dynamite. And yes, it was also super lucky. But just to wait as long as he did was part of it. And it was that moment where I went, you know, there's guys that just have, I call it the horseshoe. It almost feels like defamatory or negative, or I don't mean it that way. But there are players who are both great. You have to be great for this. And also you just have the horseshoe where some things work in your favor. Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes has it. Some random guy I've never heard of every week is ripping off kick returns now for the Chiefs inside the 15 to open the game, right? Like they just now a thing that's happening for Patrick Mahomes. I was like, maybe we as a town, we, D.C., has one of those guys who isn't just really talented, but good things happen to, mm-hmm. who has the horseshoe, who gets lucky from time to time. And that day was, I left that stadium going, maybe he's it. You know, maybe this is exactly what they've been hoping for all these years, because he is not just good. I knew that already. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, like those kind of guys. Lamar, MVP type good.
Yeah, and it would sort of be the beginning, though, of also, because we didn't know about it in the fourth quarter. We didn't know about the, if you've got the ball, talking about Washington, down a score or a tie game or whatever, you could start revving up that bus for the other team. They're going home. That's the end. You're going to win the game. You didn't know that at that point. Because Chicago, despite being outplayed the entire game, has a flurry there late. And Caleb Williams is making plays. Looked amazing, by the way, in his own right. Driving them down. A couple scrambles. A couple huge hero-type moments. They take the lead. You're going, well, that's pretty much it. A couple completions later. And then, of course, that Hail Mary. It would begin kind of that legend of, you know, the comeback kids. Or begin kind of that Jaden Daniels fourth quarter winning moment type stuff. And then it became a refrain. It became kind of part of that team's personality.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. All right, MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. We'll take your calls on this next. When was the moment that you knew Jaden Daniels might be special? And beyond just normal, exciting rookie year stuff, that he was about to go out and do some things that exceeded expectations. What was the point this year where that happened? 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Taking you up to 6:30. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. You're locked into The Fan. Double play at 3:45. Remember, we've got the last pair of tickets to get into tomorrow night's 106.7 The Fan live event in Leesburg. We're giving those away at 6 on the show today. Danny's eating good this afternoon.
We got to do a big thank you right here. So this is presented by the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington. Celebrating the region's vibrant culinary scene, participating restaurants will offer multi-course brunch and lunch selections for $25 or $35 a person, and multi-course dinners for $40, $55, and $65 per person. On-premise dining, nearly 100 restaurants are also offering cocktails, wine, non-alcoholic pairings. So Rim Tongue is the newest concept from Yum Hospitality Group, located in Georgetown, specializing in authentic Thai street food with recipes crafted by Chef Oi, the mother of YHG's executive chef, Saren Peter Kanasute. This is their first year participating in RAMW Restaurant Week and are offering a $40 three-course dinner menu available now through February 2nd. Open Wednesday to Sunday for lunch and brunch. The RAMW menu will be available all day. A lot of words there. Here's the bottom line. This place rules. It's awesome. I got a curry going. I got a Steph going. There's the...
That's a Seth.
It's not. It's
Maybe
too,
even an
it's,
Eddie.
It's quite frankly...
Looks like an Eddie.
It's too good for those guys. That's Steph.
Looks like an Ahmed.
Pad Thai, standard issue type deal that everyone always orders when they order Thai food. Theirs is awesome. Chicken skewers are great. There's a peanut noodle salad that's fantastic. I am eating well.
Do you know what you hibernate on?
What's that?
You hibernate on Restaurant Week.
Okay.
Restaurant Week is so great. The amount of value you can get, the bang for your buck when you go to one of these places for like a $35 Prixie Fixie, where they just prefix up little menu for GP. Oh, man, do I love it. Now, it's been a while because when you have little kids, here's what you can't do anymore. You can't go to restaurants. You just stop.
Not the same way,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could get a babysitter and you and the wife could go out. That costs a lot of money. That takes time. It's hard to do. But you just can't take kids to restaurants. There was a time in my life when Restaurant Week was a sport for us.
Mm-hmm.
We would look at the...
You guys really did grab that bull by the horns.
We crushed it.
The Paulsons did well there. I would say that.
We would lay out a plan. It was like a board game. Monday, we're three spots away. We're going here. Tuesday is here. And you had D.C., and then oftentimes Alexandria or Arlington or whatever be a week apart. So for a couple weeks in a row, you could just pummel all the best food in the area for almost no money. And the portions at some places are better than others, but you could find places where they did, like, I remember Rare Steak in D.C. used to do this great special where mm-hmm. they would give you, you'd get a 16-ounce ribeye as part of the prefixed menu for $35. I'm telling you, if you were a young single person who likes to go out and about in the city and eat delicious foods, Restaurant Week is something that needs to be on your radar. Every single year, you got to look forward to it. You got to plan it. You got to map it out. You got to get your resis. You got to do it.
So the we know a couple guys in obviously in the restaurant industry, just you know, having been around. I got a couple buddies that run a few different spots
because we're fat and we like to eat.
That we're big backs.
Well,
and so
I'm big back. You are not. You pretend to be on the radio.
Let's stop.
And then people come up and say you're not that fat.
And that's kind of what I'm doing. I set the bar really low, and they're like, you're not as obese and disgusting as I thought you were.
Yeah, it doesn't make it fun for me sitting there.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you are actually
And you're here too, Grant.
As fat as I thought. And I'm like, yeah, Danny likes to pretend like we're both fat. It works out well for him.
Mm.
But one of us actually has to live the life of a fat person. But anyway, I digress.
And I'm like, I don't understand anything. And then you could just leave it there.
Yeah.
But I said, I don't understand anything. And here's my follow-up to the specific thing in this case I don't understand. Why do you guys do this? Restaurant Week. I don't understand it. In other words, like...
What's not to understand?
Well...
I go to places all the time still that I went to for the first time because I went for restaurants.
And this was his answer. He was like, you got to shave a little profit here. We usually do it during slower weeks when you look at all the trends. You hire all these different firms to tell you when dining picks up and when it's lower, what's good, what's bad. So they do it during slower times, take a little, shave on what profits they might normally be able to make. But it's to introduce people to the restaurant. It's to get people in the door. And it's effective.
No brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wins. But we do. We thank Rim Tang very much for their delicious offerings today and feeding the staff here at 106.7 The Fan. The question we're asking you guys is, when did you know Jaden Daniels was special, dare we say elite? I'm going with the Bengals game when he had two incompletions on the road. Loudest building I'd been in years and years. And he was just unfazed. And it wasn't just the stat line, which was breathtaking and ridiculous. It was the throws. The quality of the throws. The touchdown to McLaurin, in a lot of ways, with the game on the line, while he's got a guy just eviscerating him in the chin strap. Come on.
Yep.
That was one of the best throws by a quarterback of this team in a decade. And in such a big spot, I thought, he's got a slow heartbeat. He's got ice water in his veins. For you, the next week is when you really wrote in pen.
It validates, right? So in other words, you see a great performance, it's just a great performance because it backed up two performances. And then you kind of go, he's making this hard thing against a team that was struggling at that point look so easy. Effortless. I mean, it was Arizona scored first. It was 14-7 midway through the game, basically. I think at halftime it was 17-7. And we don't remember it as a blowout because it was. because he turned them into that. They ran it well. They did everything well. He made quarterbacking look easy, was backing up the great with more great, and that would kind of continue a run of great. That, to me, is where I kind of went, oh, my God, this is real.
Let's hit the phones. We'll start with Johnny in Fredericksburg on the Fan. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to go with what you said, Grant. It's got to be the Bengals game, and the reason is, and not so much because that actual game, it's because those first two games, he wasn't, like Danny said, he wasn't doing so great. So for me, what I saw is that he was progressing every single game, and by that Bengals game, the dude was just slinging it.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals game was unlike anything we'd seen, because the Bucs game, he just didn't look like a passer that was capable at the, you know, the starting league level at this point of like having a good year throwing the football. Just wide receivers weren't involved, didn't see the field. I'd love to go back and actually ask him about that at some point. Like, what was the deal that day? Because we now know that's not him in any way. Maybe it was just that it was overwhelming. You know, he was obviously nervous. His first pass was like a swing pass to Brian Robinson that was so far behind him that it bounced like 15 yards backwards and out of bounds. So he's there were nerves. I get it. First game ever. The next week against the Giants for a half, again, really bad. Second half, much better. Those two quarters, first time in eight quarters where you go, we got something brewing here. But then the Bengals game was 10 out of 10. Still to this day, the best he played all season was the Cincinnati game. And it came that early in the year when I was starting, I don't want to say to worry in any way, but I was starting to go, is this a project situation?
Is this a longer process than we think? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought with all the starts in college and the fact that he just won the Heisman at a year no one ever had in the SEC, even though I have my own concerns about what he's going to be ultimately, I thought he's a hit-the-ground sprinting guy. And then after the first two games, I thought, well, maybe this is a much longer runway than we thought we might need here. And then the Bengals game was just, oh, he's actually exactly what they said he was all along.
Yeah.
Let's go to Andre in Chantilly. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, bud.
It's definitely got to be that Hail Mary game, man. It was, it was like it got escalated into prime time. Both of us were 5-2, something like that. And, I went to that game as like a solo mission, and I've seen a lot of, like, my dad calls it the clearing of FedEx Field. And after Bears took that go-ahead, nobody left. And then, the insane drive.
All-timer. Something we'll never forget.
Yeah, man. I mean, that reaction just so happened because my kids weren't interested at this point yet.
Reaction.
And my wife was there, happened to be sitting there. She usually leaves me alone on Sundays, but we're all kind of happened to be in the room watching it. And just the instant euphoria. And it was one of those, I'd shared a couple moments sports wise with my oldest and a couple with my youngest here and there watching games where you'd had some good results. But that was the first football one. They had not even cared an iota to even sit in the room with me to watch it. And my oldest happens to sit down there in the fourth quarter watching it, and he's kind of like making fun of me that they're going to lose, and this is the thing we do every week, and blah, blah, blah. And then they win, and we're like jumping up and down, hugging like it was the championship. It's amazing.
Well, you were jumping up and down, and everyone else in D.C. was doing the same. Daniels was pretty nonchalant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the rest of the team is dogpiling and jumping on each other, and they just won the Super Bowl. And I remember the Daniels, and we saw this all year long after that, too. But the Daniels reaction was another time where I kind of felt like, man, this guy is different. Like, this guy is not losing his mind about this Hail Mary. It's almost like he expected the touchdown. Same as right after the Bucs win, when he stood up with no emotion after the game-winning field goal onto the Detroit in the next round. Let's go to Dave in Waldorf. What's going on, brother?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
You bet it.
Mine's a little different, a little later in the season. We are playing like complete trash against the Atlanta Falcons to make the playoffs.
Oh.
Atlanta misses a kick. Jaden Daniels comes on the field and says, I got it from here, guys.
Yep.
You can pack it up.
That overtime drive where he just
that was sublime,
started
wasn't it?
Calling his own number. And Cliff Kingsbury called some plays into the huddle. I'm pretty sure the headset was working, and I saw Kingsbury looking at his IHOP menu and talking into that little Motorola headset. I think Jaden Daniels said, oh, good play, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
And then he told everyone the play that Cliff had said, but then he just did whatever he wanted after he said hike. That was complete schoolyard ball. It was complete high school football. I'm the best guy on the field.
I'm better than 1, 2, 3, 4, all 11 of you.
To some extent, just my proclivity is to not really enjoy that. But when the game's on the line, it's overtime, and the quarterback's just walking his team down the field, and he is definitively the best athlete out of the 22 on the grass at that point, you just kind of sit back and enjoy it. 16 carries in that game, was tied with two other games, by the way, for his season high. He had three 16-carry games. That one, though, where five of them were on that final overtime drive.
Well, you look at the play log. Jaden Daniels scrambles for seven. Jaden Daniels pass complete to Ertz. Jaden Daniels for seven. Brian Robinson for 1 yard. And I think he said, enough.
No more.
We're not doing that anymore. And then it's scramble, pass, pass, pass. Jaden Daniels to the right. Jaden Daniels to the left. Jaden Daniels scramble and then pass to Ertz, touchdown, game winner.
And you're in the playoffs now.
Yep.
Oh, by the way. Let's go to Alex and Ashton. You're on Grant and Danny.
Oh, man. Mine was at the beginning when I can't remember who they were playing in preseason. And then he changed the call. He changed the audible, and he didn't even yell out, Omaha or here we go.
That calls
for a lot of trust. And then after that, Bobby Wagner came on there, and he was like talking about how about his work ethic and about his
how early he got to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that. I think he's talking about the Jets game, because if I remember, it was the second play of the Jets game, which I think was the first preseason game.
Yeah, because remember, the first pass, similar to his first pass in regular season, he threw a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, which should have been like a little check down or a little, like, let's get you comfortable route. And he went, okay, that's the first one, nerves. Yeah. Then he checks to De'Ami Brown on a go ball and puts it into the bucket.
Which, I mean, I'm overstating this a little bit. It is indicative some of the season. He was, the deep ball to me, was what he did best maybe in terms of throwing the football. Like often, I mean, he missed Terry a handful of times, a bunch of times, whatever. That's going to happen.
Sure.
But if you think about their home runs, like the perfect ball to De'Ami against Detroit, how many of the beautifully dropped-in balls to McLaurin down the field did we get this year? Exceptional thrower of the deep ball. The line of scrimmage stuff all the way through the Eagles game occasionally reared his head as a little bit too hot, a little bit too wide, a little bit too low in that Eagles game, mm-hmm. which was some of the, I guess, you know, what we heard coming out, which is to say that this guy is going to throw the deep ball beautifully from day one. And he did, literally, preseason game one, second play. That was a 40-yard teardrop right into De'Ami's hands. We would see that again as the year went on,
yeah, that would come up.
800-636-1067. You want to talk Jaden Daniels with us? When did you know he was going to be special this season? Plus, we'll get you a double play next on The Fan. Grant and Danny, welcome you back on The Fan, our Friday field trip series. Tomorrow brings us out to Leesburg at the Green Tree Tavern. We'll be there live from 2 to 6:30. It's time for a double play. What's going on in their lives? Nothing to do with sports.
I'm going to bait the hook here, GP. See if I can get my guy Grant to watch something. Three episodes. That's it.
So far,
it's
so good.
It's a great start. So I put the worm on the hook and zzz,
how
cast
long are
it.
They? 10 hours each?
No.
Okay.
I am, I'd say, 80% of the way through the first one. Here's what I've got so far. It begins in Tupelo, Mississippi, it's the birthplace of Elvis Presley. I know that because of this documentary. I'd forgotten that, but that's the case. And Elvis is big business down there in Tupelo. An Elvis impersonator, whose brother also becomes an Elvis impersonator. They're the only brother Elvis impersonator act.
Quite a distinction.
They made a big deal about telling me about that.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
So eventually, it's going fine. They're getting gigs, but it's not enough to pay the bills. So one of these guys starts a family, meets a lady, needs a job. So his gimmick is Elvis will clean your business or whatever. So it's like an Elvis cleaner kind of thing, and his own commercials, a little bit of YouTube, at the time, MySpace or whatever, helps him get his foot in the door for the local business.
It's like
and
a janitor.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. But the Elvis, it sounds comical to you and I, but down there, it's like, come by the law offices of Danny. We'll take you. Good stuff. whatever. Like they're doing that in the local ads, like local car dealership.
Elvis everything.
Right? He's been on the job. He gets a big contract at the largest hospital system in all of the state of Mississippi. So he doesn't have any. He stopped cleaning all the other businesses. That's now his whole contract. One day on the job after several months, there's a mess that nobody can clean up. Kind of morbid, but it's in the morgue. There's a drain that's backed up. He's there in a hazmat suit working his tail off. This is how our story begins. He says to himself, not the brightest bulb in the box, I'm very thirsty. I'm very hot, perspiring. I'd love a drink. So he opens up the fridge in the morgue. You and I wouldn't open the fridge in the morgue looking for a beverage. We'd probably say there's stuff in there that's unsavory we shouldn't be seeing. He opens it up and finds a severed head. This is where our story begins. It ends, there's a journey to be taken here. It ends with him being arrested, allegedly, whatever I'm supposed to say, for trying to poison the president of the United States. The kings of Tupelo. The kings of Tupelo.
Hmm. It feels like a lot.
It's not a little.
It seems like they're throwing too much at me, which tells me maybe they don't have a whole lot. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. It's only three episodes.
Like, I think I'm out. What you just said was captivating. That's interesting.
That's, I mean, again, but there's so many things to be pinned in. I have no idea how we get to these places.
Here's what I'm mad about.
Okay.
You've introduced two mysteries. Pick one and do a documentary about that. You have two mysteries, you probably don't have a great one. It's like goalies in hockey. It's like first baseman in baseball. How many you got? Two? Then you don't have one really good one. Is this a documentary about what he did to the president? Or is this a documentary about a head in a refrigerator?
It's about this dude, right? And so there's plenty of detail. I'm still learning. I'm only in episode one. I'm going, how in the hell are we getting all these different places? Because each new little development is jaw-dropping. Remember the they made the dumb movie about it, the 30 minutes or less, but the horrifying story about the pizza guy. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It reminds me of that, where you go, wait, what? Like the end of the first episode of that one, he's like, yeah, there's a dead body in my garage or whatever, and I didn't put it there. Anyway, come get it.
That is what's the best part of some of these documentaries is the stranger than fiction nature.
Mm-hmm.
That this stuff happens in real life. That the stuff that you and I can't fathom,
right,
that seems like, even like if it's in, because like that 30 minutes or less movie,
uh-huh,
I didn't like because it was so unbelievably over the top. And it's like, this is not practical. This is nothing that would ever happen. And then you find out, actually, it's a true story.
Based on 100% real events, right, that are astounding and jaw-dropping.
And people are weird and crazy and nuts. And the things that you and I can't fathom do happen. So that is when I watch some of these docs, like I've told you about, you got to watch this one or that one.
Uh-huh.
The one specifically that I remember that I was telling you about, and you're like, no chance. Some of these things really do happen.
Mm-hmm. What was the one called, and I'm blanking on it, but that you were all over? The American Nightmare. Yeah. Nobody believed,
yeah,
and then they caught the guy.
Right.
And it's like, actually, it sounds far-fetched, but here's exactly what happened and the dude that did it.
So here's why you got a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason you came to me with this, if I could say this.
Yeah.
True Crime Paulson.
I thought I have something here.
Miniseries Paulson.
Three episodes True Crime.
I'll probably watch it.
Kings,
but I'm not happy about it.
You're upset with your guy?
No, not you. I'm upset with them. I'm upset with the documentary maker.
Kings of Tupelo.
Three episodes is exactly what we're looking for.
I mean,
about 90 minutes or less, probably per.
About an hour for the first one, yeah. And I'm 80% of the way through it. And I like, with all due respect, we got a thing to do. I'm going to do the job. I got 2.5 more hours. I just want to go watch it. Like, I am hooked.
Are the Caps going to get any tension tonight?
For sure. I mean, okay. I got stuff in a minute. My kids got basketball practice. I'm annoyed at everybody for being in the way of my eyeballs and Kings of Tupelo. I'm in. In.
You have threaded the needle, and so I'm going to play along with your game. I asked for a few episodes.
Yep.
You gave me that. I asked for a whodunit.
You don't have to wait long for second seasons.
Right. I will give you what you're looking
for. That's what I'm talking about.
This is Netflix?
Netflix.
Couple clicks away. Very easy. Thank you.
And my buddy Roy Scrovel is a movie premiering on Prime today. You're cordially invited with Reese Witherspoon and Will Ferrell.
I love that your buddy gets 5 seconds. And the Kings of Tupelo get all the minutes.
Oh, I'm proud of it. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen this, though.
Understood. Woo-hoo. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in due time. I got a quick one here. Ryan tweeted me and said, we were talking about Restaurant Week.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Restaurant Week's the worst money-wise for servers. It brings out cheapos. I could see that.
Yeah.
Because I'm tipping based on my bill, and my bill is way less for what we're eating. I think if I had an exceptional waiter or waitress or service, like anytime, I would go above and beyond. But you're definitely going to make a little less money. I would say to Ryan, I'm going to restaurants still that I went to only because of Restaurant Week. If I wasn't there, you're probably making less money. It's probably good for the business overall.
Yeah, my other counter is
more people there.
Yeah, the table could be empty. Right?
Exactly.
Like,
right.
If you get people there, so I don't know. But it may not be as fun if you're working a packed house when there's not Restaurant Week. You're right. But I think it's chicken or the egg. I don't know that the house is packed without Restaurant Week.
Double Play, driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. Our Beltway Blitz comes your way next on Grant and Danny.